introduction, Dr. Hickson. It's indeed a pleasure to be back at the Range Beef Cow Symposium this year to visit with each of you about mineral supplementation. But before I get started, I will let you know I'm going to refer pretty regularly back to both of the talks we heard earlier this morning, both with Dr. Patterson's talk on water quality and Dr. Rasby's talk. One of the most pressing things, or one of the most interesting things that I took home from Trey's talk was the signs of a sulfur problem. And in particular, the calf that was pushing his head into the corner, that really makes me think that we need to check our water quality at SDSU, because after each one of our faculty meetings, that's exactly what our department head Don Boggs looks like. But anyway, what we're going to talk about today is we're not going to get too heavy into mineral nutrition per se. I'm going to try to talk about more dollars and cents approach to mineral nutrition rather than getting into the specifics. If you would like some information on the specifics, there's been some reviews that have been done at past Range Beef Cow Symposiums. Last year, or excuse me, 2 years ago, Dr. Terry Engel, before that, Jerry Spears and Larry Corr, all three of them have done terrific reviews over mineral nutrition. I'd point you in that direction. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the common sense approach or dollars and cents approach for mineral nutrition. And the first thing I think that we need to talk about by way of an introduction is that there's really only two certainties when it comes to mineral nutrition. The first one is that animals do require minerals. We know that. We know that they require macro minerals. Those would be calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, potassium. Those in a percentage type format. The second thing that we know is that mineral nutrition is extremely complex, and that most of us who've been involved in that research understand that there's probably more we don't know than what we actually understand. So there's a lot of give and take and some estimation, if you will, when it comes to mineral nutrition. What we need to do when it comes to a farmer or rancher formulating a cost-effective mineral supplementation program is first and foremost assess your current mineral status. Okay, and this gets back to the old adage that says if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay. Take a good, honest look at your production. Look at your weaning weights, look at your reproductive function, and see if you do have a problem. Okay, do your calves get to the feed yard? Do they keep themselves healthy? Do you have good reproductive rates? And if so, there may not be much for you to try to work on in the area of mineral nutrition. On the flip side, if you look at that and you take into account some of the data that Trey showed you and some health data and some other things like that, it might give you some clues that you need to do some adjustment to your program. The next thing you need to do is take a look at your supply of minerals. Okay, find out what you have in your feed, find out what you have in your water, and compare that to the animal's requirements. And that's something I certainly encourage you to do working with your veterinarians and your nutritionists. And then finally, to try to make up the difference, obviously you want to formulate a supplement that's as economically viable as possible. We talked a little bit about objectively analyzing production, and this is something you want to do. Again, try to be as honest with yourself as possible. Compare it to some benchmarks, compare it to previous performance, possibly even compare it to your neighbors. Do something that try to make those as objective as possible, and then make sure that if you do see a difference, that there's not something else causing it. Okay, for example, if you discover that you're maybe 10 or 15 percentage points below what you normally have on pregnancy rates, make sure that your cows are in good condition, or make sure that you don't have some type of pathogen, a BRD or something like that coming in that's actually causing the problem in comparison to minerals. Then take a look at your mineral supply. And here's a very, very critical point, and this is actually one of the things that can help drive development of that cost-effective mineral program. Test your forages, okay? When you look at it, when you think about it, and you look at it on a total supply basis, the majority of the minerals that our cattle consume are going to come from the forage, okay? The cows are going to consume forages, whether they're grazed or harvested. That's going to be the major supply of the minerals that our cows get. Check the supplements, okay, and we'll get into this in a little bit more detail, and then finally take a look at the water, okay. So you'll want to sample, and you'll want to sample over time, okay. And the biggest comment that I get back from producers is it's expensive to sample. Well, I'm going to show you some opportunities that it might be more cost effective to spend $20 a sample for a couple of samples throughout the year and end up saving yourself in the long run. Finally, if you suspect the problem, one thing that you can do is directly sample the animal. And you can do this either via blood or liver. Okay. Now, those of us in the mineral area would really prefer that you use liver. That's a really major storage site for a lot of our minerals, in particular the trace minerals. Okay. So if you have access to a veterinarian or an extension personnel that can do a liver biopsy, that's by far the best way for you to go to assess that mineral status. Now, sampling feeds. We know through years and years of research that cattle will select a better diet than what we can go out and clip, okay? Now, this is in particular true to some minerals, not all, but just some, okay? You'll want to try to go out and sample the forages that the cattle are eating. And we all know that that's going to change throughout the year. So obviously you're going to want to sample cool season grasses early and warm seasons throughout the summertime. But try to sample what the cattle are consuming. Trace mineral-wise, those clipped samples are a very, very good indicator of what's available. All right? Trace minerals, we've seen it in research that that's a very good indicator of what's in the forages, and they don't change much over time. On the other hand, calcium and phosphorus, and even magnesium and potassium to some extent, will vary as the plant matures. Very, very similar to what we're familiar with looking at protein. Okay? They will tail off as that plant starts to mature. But generally, again, the animal's going to select a diet that's higher in those particular minerals than what we can clip. So that's an automatic built-in safety factor if you think about it and you formulate your supplements based off of your clippings. Then what you'll need to do is consider intake. Okay, and this is both intake of the feed, forage, and any supplements you're providing, along with the mineral. Now, that's a major, major factor that a lot of people tend to forget about. Okay, they put an expensive mineral out in front of their cattle, and they'll either consume it at too high of a rate or they won't touch it, okay? And that becomes a particular problem when you start dealing with the real poor quality water issues that Trey talked about earlier, okay? A lot of you guys in those areas, cattle flat out will not touch mineral, and you actually need to entice them to do it or even force feed them to some extent. But consider the intake of both the feed and the mineral, and then make a comparison to the requirements. And I'm not going to go much into requirements during the talk. Matter of fact, I'm not going to touch it. But it is in your proceedings. I put a chart in there that describes what the requirements are for different classes of livestock, and you can take a look at that for your reference at a later date. Then, when you think about meeting those requirements, again, the primary source of minerals for beef cattle is their forage. I should say for cows, is their forage. And so it becomes extremely important for you to critically assess what the mineral concentration is in those different forages, again, regardless of whether they're grazed or harvested. Next, you need to consider any supplemental feeds that you're using, okay? And I'll show you a chart. All of those alternative feeds that Rick talked to you about earlier, along with some other things like wheat middlings and sunflower meal, they are tremendous mineral sources, and they present a tremendous opportunity for us as farmers and ranchers to reduce the amount of money that we spend on supplemental mineral. And then finally, you need to consider where your supplemental levels fall and how you're going to provide that, okay? Most commonly, we think of feeding it. But there are also products available that would allow you to provide minerals via a bolus, okay, a sustaining long-acting bolus, or as a long-acting injectable form. So there are multiple opportunities there if fed mineral is not doesn't work for you. Okay, getting back to the sampling and showing you how important it can be to assess the level of the minerals in your forages, this is some research that came from the Fort Keogh Station up in Miles City. And what Dr. Lane Griggs did was compare forages for mineral concentration using both live and dead tissue. And as you can see here, the column on the left is live tissue, and the percent concentrations of these macro minerals, calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, and potassium, and how they compared to the dead. And what you'll see is all three of those that have the stars by them, those are significantly different from between live and dead tissue. So it does illustrate the point that as a plant matures, that those macro minerals will decline in concentration, okay? But the second thing to note are those levels, and I'm going to come back to this a little bit. In many, many cases, for example, with phosphorus, 0.16 will cover a significant portion of a cow's requirement, okay? And we'll talk more about phosphorus here as we proceed through the presentation. This slide shows the trace minerals, okay? We've got four of them listed here. Actually, one of them is an antagonist. Zinc, copper, manganese, and molybdenum. Trey talked a little bit about molybdenum and how problematic that can be, in particular when there's high sulfate water present. But what you notice on this particular slide is that they don't change much, Okay, so again, it gives you a good indication if you use clip samples, irregardless of whether or not it's live or dead tissue, that those mineral concentrations are there and you can pretty much bank on it. Okay, now, with respect to concentrations, in this particular sample, that zinc is only about two-thirds of the requirement. Copper, that's not even close. Okay, the copper requirements are closer to 10. Manganese, that's not too far off. And molybdenum at 1 part per million is not too high. Okay, but that does tell you that you can use samples and effectively get by with it. Now here I'm going to just show you one more from a different location. Okay, now we're looking at Sand Hills Hay. Okay, and this was taken from three different counties in Nebraska. And what you'll see here is I've got a full gamut of minerals there on the left and the three counties across the top. Everything that's in purple, and I hope that shows up. Yep, everything that's in purple, but at those levels, if these cattle were consuming just this hay, at those levels, everything in purple would be sufficient enough to cover 3/4 of the cow's requirement. Okay? 3/4 of the cow's requirement. Now, that really tells me that there is opportunity to save money when it comes to minerals, and in particular, when you look across here with respect to phosphorus. Another thing you'll want to consider is, in particular, those of us in a more eastern environment, as you look at silages and delivered feeds, if you happen to be using wet corn gluten feed or wet distiller's grains or something like that where you're receiving periodic deliveries, it's important to sample those over time. Okay? We've got a set of data in Brookings, and the University of Minnesota has one as well, that shows a pretty significant amount of variation in the mineral concentrations and the protein concentrations of those alternative feeds. So if you're getting deliveries periodically, I would really encourage you to take a sample here and again, and then as well as you move through a silage silo or a pit or anything like that. Sample them over time so that you can track any changes. Now, something that's very, very important for you to realize, and this is not well documented and it's not well understood, so this is kind of a guideline that's been put forth by some of my predecessors. The minerals in feeds are not 100% available. Okay? They're not 100% available. So, for example, if you go back to those samples that Dr. Griggs had from Miles City, and you see that 20 parts per million zinc, you're not going to get a full 20 parts per million in the diet. The cow's not going to be able to use part of that mineral that's present. So what we would suggest as a guideline is that you back those levels down to half. Okay, assume that about half of the mineral is available. Now, that's pretty conservative. In some cases, it'll be higher, but there'll be other times where it might be just a pinch lower. And then when it comes to sampling, absolutely, it's critical that you sample your water. Okay, that sulfur molybdenum thiomolybdate problem that Trey described is absolutely essential, and it can literally wipe out copper absorption. Okay, so if you haven't tested your water, I can't encourage you enough to go out and do that, and at least have a screening done so that you can get a baseline value and know where your total dissolved solids are. Now, we also want to consider those antagonists, and from a copper perspective, anything over 300 parts per million in terms of high sulfate water can actually reduce copper absorption, okay? That can reduce copper absorption even if molybdenum is not present. Sulfur can act by itself, but it's even more problematic when you've got both sulfur and molybdenum together. In terms of ratios, I know all of us like to think of ratios. If you've got a copper-molybdenum ratio in your forage of 4.5 to 1 or less, in other words, you've got less copper in relation to molybdenum, and your total dietary sulfur, the combination of feed and water, is over 0.25%, you really need to make some adjustments to your mineral program. Okay? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you automatically need to switch over to a chelate or an organic source, but that is a place where they can certainly come into play and do you some good. Finally, one we don't think about very often, but it's definitely a problem, is iron. Okay, iron is a very, very strong copper antagonist as well. For the most part, that's not going to be an issue in water. It's going to be more from grazing cattle. Okay, they're not necessarily the neatest eaters we've ever seen, and they will pull some dirt up and get that in and contribute some iron to their diet. Formulating supplements. So how do you make up the difference if you've got some cattle that are not able to consume what they need from the basal diet, forages plus supplements? How do you address it? Well, the first thing you'll need to know is the requirements. And again, I put that table in your book so that you'll have something, or in the proceedings, so you'll have something to use as a reference. But I would encourage you to utilize your extension personnel and your nutritionists to try to come up with what you actually need and formulate a good supplement. Taking into account those minerals in the feeds, any potential antagonists, the final step is to consider source. Okay, and this is a pretty contentious issue depending on who you talk to in the industry. One thing to remember is that phosphorus is generally the most expensive mineral to supplement. Okay, and it's dramatic. It can have a dramatic effect on the cost of your mineral program. So why do we feed so much? Okay, we typically will see a 12-12 mineral that costs $400 to $500. But why is that? Well, it goes back to the late 30s, early 40s, some work that was done in Texas on the King Ranch where they supplemented phosphorus and saw some very dramatic improvements in percent calf crop, percent weaning weight, pound gain per cow exposed, and then the economic return on investment was pretty significant. Okay, and that was essentially the basis of what we know today as our phosphorus supplement. It was based off of this early research. Now, the thing to keep in mind is the forages that were used in this particular experiment, those native forages, are extremely low in phosphorus. Okay, so you would expect a pretty profound effect of supplementation. Some more recent work out of North Dakota by Dr. Jim Karn with USDA would show that those dramatic effects didn't really exist. Okay, he looked at both heifers and cows in forages that had a significantly higher level of phosphorus than what the folks in Texas had. He saw some response in conception rate on heifers, in both in terms of conception rates and live weight gain, and as well weight gain on cows and some effects on weaning weight on the calves. No effect on conception rates in the mature cows. However, the magnitude was much, much smaller than what they saw in Texas, and it was pretty inconsistent. Okay, so there is some opportunity to save some dollars when it comes to phosphorus supplementation. Now, here's where I start referring back to Dr. Rasby's talk. For those of you that are using alternative feeds, corn gluten feed, distillers grains, sunflower meal, wheat middlings, they are all tremendous phosphorus sources. Okay, they are tremendous phosphorus sources. You can see there the percent phosphorus contained in each of those feeds, corn gluten feed, distillers, sunflower meal, and wheat mids as you go down the table. Those are taken directly out of the NRC. Okay, so those are just book values. They can be significantly higher or slightly lower than what you see there. But if you look across that table, if you feed 2, 4, or 6 pounds per day, you can see how much phosphorus each of those feeds contributes to the diet. Okay, that's what that table is meant to do. And if you think about it, let's say you're putting 4 pounds of corn gluten feed in front of your cows, which would be a pretty decent kind of supplement that you'd put together. You're contributing 0.14% to the total diet. Now, in the bottom, you can see a range of requirements. A mid-gestation cow has a requirement of only 0.17 to 0.22. So you've really contributed a significant amount of phosphorus to meeting her requirements just from the alternative feeds that you chose to use. So that gives you, again, an opportunity to significantly reduce the amount of money that you spent. Now, I've got to give credit to Steve Paisley for this next couple of slides. What these are, and again, these are in your proceedings, so you don't feel like you have to write them down or anything. What these are, these next two slides, are the percent phosphorus that you need in a traditional or in a mineral supplement, a low-inclusion mineral supplement, 3-ounce intake. These are the percent phosphorus that's required to meet the requirements of a cow. In this particular slide, it's a cow that's in mid-gestation. Okay? Here's the percent phosphorus that you need in a supplement based on the total diet phosphorus across the top, 0.05, 0.15, or 0.25. Now, that total dietary phosphorus, that's going to take into account both the forage and the gluten feed or anything else that you're feeding. Okay? So you can see that our traditional 12-12 mineral is literally feeding almost twice as much as what we need. We're overfeeding phosphorus. What about late gestation and early lactation? Well, the table's set up here the same way, and you can see if with a real low phosphorus level, it becomes very, very important to supplement. Okay. However, if we can put together a diet, a combination of feeds that can get us closer to that 0.25, again, we don't need near as much phosphorus as what's contained in most of our traditional mineral supplements. So what does that mean in terms of dollars and cents? Well, let's just assume that we go from a 12-12 down to a mineral supplement that contains only 8% phosphorus. Okay? If we go by that, $11, typically what the ballpark figure is that each percent phosphorus costs about $11 or adds about $11 per ton to the cost of your mineral. So if we reduce our phosphorus supplementation by 4%, we can reduce our mineral cost by approximately $44 a ton. Okay, let's assume that's for a year-round mineral. We're going to save about $1.50 per cow. $750 for those of you that have a 500 head operation. That's not chump change. It's not huge, but it's certainly not chump change. There's some opportunity there. And certainly if we're using more alternative feeds, or we don't need to supplement, I mean, if we can go even lower than 8%, as you see here, obviously that presents even more of an opportunity for cost savings. Trace mineral supplementation gets a little bit more tricky, okay? For trace minerals, there's a tremendous amount of variability, and they're more susceptible to antagonisms. So what most mineral nutritionists would tell you is to formulate your supplement to meet somewhere between 75 and 125% of the NRC requirement. And that's what this table has here. If you look down these, for all these different trace minerals, cobalt, copper, iodine, manganese, selenium, and zinc, these are the biggies. These are the ones that we worry most about. For a 1,200-pound cow that's consuming 2% of her body weight, and I know she's pretty mythical when you look around the countryside, but if you assume that particular animal consuming a 3-ounce per head per day mineral, these are the levels that you need to meet those percents of, or those different levels of her NRC requirement. Okay, so that's just a guideline you can use when you're evaluating different mineral supplements for your different operations. There's a couple of things to keep in mind. The FDA regulates some of our mineral levels. Okay, for selenium, we can only include 3 milligrams per head per day or 0.3 parts per million in the total diet. Okay, that's regulated. We can't put any more in than that. But that's more than enough to meet our requirements. As a matter of fact, there's places in South Dakota and other places around the countryside where we have more of a problem with selenium toxicity than we do trying to correct a deficiency. The other thing is iodine. Iodine is regulated at 10 milligrams per head per day. Now, there's a lot of press that would tell you or that would suggest that iodine can help prevent foot rot. Okay? And there is some research that would support that. However, it's significantly higher levels than at 10 milligrams per head per day. So keep that in mind. Mineral sources. This becomes, like I said, a little bit contentious. You start looking at organic versus inorganic and different types of inorganic minerals and their bioavailability, and that's where things start to get really murky in the world of mineral nutrition. But it's a critical thing for you to evaluate when you start to put together your program, okay? And I would encourage you, again, work with your extension personnel or your nutritionist to figure out a cost per unit or a cost, cost per unit of available mineral, okay? It sounds kind of complicated, but basically what it does is take into account the percent of copper, for example, contained in copper sulfate, and then also takes into account the bioavailability. So you've adjusted it a little bit to determine the most economic source. Now, when it comes to bioavailability, in general, okay, and this is a big generality, you can certainly take pot shots at this and shoot it full of holes, and I wouldn't argue with you a whole lot, but in general, the most bioavailable sources of minerals are organic sources, your chelates or complexes, those types of things. Next in line would be sulfates and chlorides, and they're usually pretty interchangeable, okay? Next would be carbonates and oxides. And again, there are certainly exceptions to this rule. For example, zinc oxide is one that comes to mind. That's actually a very common and relatively available source of zinc. So keep that in mind, and that's something you can look at when you're evaluating feed tag. Now, the other thing is, if, for example, you're looking at a feed tag and it says that there's copper sulfate in it or that there's copper protonate in it, but it doesn't guarantee you a level, that's a little bit of an issue. I would be skeptical as to how much copper is contained in that particular feed. Okay, so study your mineral feed tags before you make any real serious decisions. Organic minerals, chelates, they get a tremendous amount of press, and actually that's what I did all of my PhD work in, and there is a fair body of data that would suggest that they are more bioavailable. Okay, in other words, they're absorbed more effectively or more efficiently than an inorganic source. Now the question comes up, is are they worth it? Okay? Is there enough of a benefit to overcome the added cost? And that's something that I'm not going to touch because it becomes extremely variable. Okay? There's data. I can give you a stack of data over here that says that it'll cure everything from foot rot to BVD to adding an extra pound of gain, and a stack over here that says that it won't do a darn thing. Okay? Part of that response is going to depend on the status of the animal. If your animal is already already has good mineral stores, they're not deficient in anything, the chances of seeing a response are very, very small. Okay. On the other hand, if you're dealing with that pond that stock bin that Trey showed you with 10,000 parts per million sulfate and 3 or 4 parts per million molybdenum in the forage, you could very well see a significant response from switching to an organic source. Okay, so there's a lot of players in that whole realm of organic minerals. So how much does it cost? How much do organic minerals cost? Well, I had a custom supplement formulated. It's meant to cover 100% of the NRC requirements for a mid-gestation cow. Okay, and we'll assume that it's that same mythical 1,200-pound cow consuming 2% of her body weight, and she's consuming 3 ounces per head per day. If in this particular supplement, if it was formulated using 100% inorganic minerals, sulfates, the chlorides, and so on, it would come out to $580 a ton. Okay, if you supplied half of the minerals from an organic source, it added an extra $100 a ton. Okay, now that doesn't sound too bad. If you think about it, it's an extra $3.42 a cow if you look at it year round. So bottom line is, if you did switch, now that's not changing levels or anything. That's strictly staying at meeting 100% of the NRC requirement. You need to build that revenue. You need to get that revenue back in some form or fashion. Okay, improved conception rates, improved health, improved growth rate in your calves, it's got to come back. And that's truly the bottom line of what we're trying to get at today, is if you make a change to your mineral program that costs you money, you need to make sure that you see it on the bottom line when it comes sale time. Okay? Responses, again, are the key to evaluating changes. There are numerous potential benefits to changing your mineral program. Okay? Health is a big one. You hear a tremendous amount of research related to health and immune function and minerals. And the trace minerals in particular are very intricately tied to immune function. However, there's only a small body of data that shows tremendous advantages in terms of growth rate or overall morbidity and mortality. Okay, those are very difficult numbers to derive. So most of what we're basing our assessment on immune status are very, very finite measures. Okay, antibody titers, response to vaccination, these kinds of things that are very, very intricate and very minute in terms of the overall immune system as a whole. So keep that in mind. You need to see some type of monetary benefit when you make these changes. Try to run through a cost-benefit analysis and keep in mind that you've got to be able to make any changes that cost you money. You've got to make them pay. Now, with the research that we've talked about so far, and in particular the phosphorus research, is there opportunity that we can reduce mineral costs without sacrificing production? And there sure is. There's a couple of ways to do that. One is just supplementing only when needed. Okay, here's an example. Let's say you only supplement your cattle from 45 days prior to calving through the breeding season, and that's it. The rest of the year, all they get is white salt. Okay, in some scenarios, that will work, and it'll work very, very effectively. Okay, cattle can store most of the minerals that we're dealing with, and they're very effective at transmitting those minerals or passing those minerals on to their calves in utero and in some cases through the milk. So that's a very good way to take a look at possibly reducing your mineral costs. Now, it's not going to work for everybody, but in some cases, if you've tracked your minerals contained in your forages and your feeds, that might be a good option for you. The other thing is, and there are some programs around the country that advocate this, is to specifically tailor your mineral program to your exact feed program. Okay, in other words, you sample forages once a month or every couple of months, and you adjust your mineral program accordingly. Now, that's a really good way to do it, but again, it gets back to that cost of analysis, and there is some cost tied up there, so you need to, again, make sure that the savings in your mineral program is enough to pay for the added expense in terms of analysis. Here's just an example comparing a short-term supplementation to a year-round program. Let's say we've got a mineral supplement that costs us $400 a ton, and we're going to supplement it at 2 ounces per head per day year-round. Okay, that comes out to $9.13 a cow. If we take a similar cost program, similar cost, $400 a ton, we give them a little bit more, we jump up to 3 ounces per head per day, but we're only going to give it to them from February 1st to July 1st. So it's that strategic program from prior to calving to through the breeding season. We can reduce our costs down to only $5.63 per cow, saving us 38% or $1,750 on that 500-head operation. So again, there's some tremendous opportunity for you to put some extra money in your pocket by adjusting your mineral program. A couple comments in summary here. it's important for us as farmers and ranchers to objectively evaluate our current mineral status, okay? And that comes down to, again, looking at performance, comparing conception rates, comparing weaning rates, weaning weights, all of these different objective measures of performance, and then rule out any factors that could also be contributing, okay? Many of us, myself included, are quick to blame our mineral program for problems, but usually they're indicative of something else going on, okay? If it's a health problem or an energy protein imbalance or something like that, there's usually another factor that's contributing to the problems that we see. Sample your forages, sample your supplements and your water, okay? And don't forget about those antagonists. Those are going to dictate how much you need to adjust some of the specific minerals, in particular copper. That's a major player that you'll need to adjust based on the level of the antagonists. Then after you put all of that into a blender and you come out with a mix and you figure out how short you are in terms of meeting the animal's requirements, then you can go ahead and develop a program that's cost-effective to correct any imbalances and possibly develop a strategic program that would allow you to save even more money when it comes to your mineral programs. And again, the bottom line is any change to your mineral program needs to result in some type of economic return, okay? And if it doesn't, you're basically wasting your money, and that's the bottom line. So with that, I certainly appreciate your attention, and I definitely look forward to answering your questions later on this evening.